Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers. I'm very excited to talk to Michael Morgan today. He's an expert in Alzheimer's and dementia, and he's the author of Preventing Alzheimer's in Just 10 Minutes a Day. And that is the title of this video, and that is the title of our topic today. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you talk about preventing Alzheimer's. You know, my background is as the memory guy. I've talked about Alzheimer's for 20 years at least. And the research has gone through so many different permutations. When somebody says you can prevent Alzheimer's with just, you know, 10 minutes a day, I have some ideas of where you're going with that, but it does seem, you know, quite an extraordinary claim. So explain that. How can you claim something like that?
Yeah, and it is an extraordinary claim, and we're doing it in bits and pieces, but what we're doing is I'm adding kind of a missing piece possibly to a lot of research that's been done. And my specialty is teaching something called cranial sacral therapy. And the whole premise of what we're doing, it's very simple when you think about it. A lot of brain science, without getting too technical, says that memory is interfered with because there's something that clogs up the brain. And how the brain clogs up is that there's something called cerebrospinal fluid that cranial sacral therapy is very intimately associated with. And what happens when people get older, we don't know exactly why, but we do have some good theories about this relating to diet, trauma, any number of things that can occur, heavy metals in the body, that type of thing, that the flow of cerebrospinal fluid actually starts to decrease. And what we found is that people with Alzheimer's and dementia have 75% less flow of cerebrospinal fluid than that of a normal adult.
You know, this actually makes a lot of sense with the latest science because, you know, people are talking about the biome of the brain for the first time in history, where we used to think there was a membrane that protected the brain from bacteria, and that's not true. There's actually all sorts of different microorganisms in the brain. And, you know, that cerebral spinal fluid is kind of like the lymph system, but that's what cleans things out. One of the theories of Alzheimer's, the most prominent theory today, is that Alzheimer's is a byproduct of the immune system trying to attack and kill some impurities or you know, bacteria, something like that. And if it can't get at it, i.e. with, you know, the spinal fluid system, and it can't like flush it out, what it does is it sends these beta amylase, compounds in there to destroy it, and they end up destroying the brain in the process and leaving these plaques and tangles. So it's this interesting cascade effect, but you're right. If you could somehow, re-trigger the youth of that cerebral spinal fluid, you know, you'd probably prevent it from the beginning.
Well, you just summarized my research. Very nice.
Now you're right. I try.
the missing piece, which is, there's a new system sciences discovered in the last 10 years called the glymphatic system, which is about draining. It's like the lymph system in the brain. And so when the system dries up and you get all this, you know, gunk, which is amyloid plaque and neurofibrillary tangles, what cranial sacral therapy seems to do, we're looking at the result and then saying, what happened? So in the black box is something called cranial sacral therapy, which pumps up the volume of cerebral spinal fluid so it can clear out all those plaques and wash them away. It's kind of like if you go through a car wash and you got this really dark speck on your car and you put the nozzle really close to clean it out, or you got a dish that's got a speck.
I think it's more like a Roto-Rooter. You know, you're sending a snake down there and getting it cleaned out.
Whatever works for you, whatever analogy works, absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you do that? I mean, it's, I don't know your method, but it sounds like there's a psychology aspect to it. I mean, you don't want to put pressure into the brain and push fluids. So what's going on?
Well, the brain is kind of delicate. Think about this. This glymphatic system is basically comprised of 100 billion neurons and 100 billion what are called astrocytes. So it's like Christmas tree lights. The neurons are like the lights, and the astrocytes are like the cables that hold them together. And within that, there's 400 miles in this brain of vascular flow. So it's like, how does the brain hold all that in there? So it requires a very delicate, gentle touch. It's like 5 grams. That's what we teach people to do in cranial sacral therapy. And with a touch that it doesn't even look like we're doing anything, we can actually encourage that flow. There's something called a still point, which helps increase the volume of cerebrospinal fluid.
This is kind of like a massage thing? You touch on a certain like part of the head?
Right on the top of the head or on the back of the head. We train people how to do it. Now, fortunately, because you're interested in self-help, there's a device called a still point inducer that you can order from my website or any number of websites, including the UpLedger website, which you can lie on the back of it like a cradle for 10 minutes a day. That will manually help increase the flow of fluid, cerebral spinal fluid. I have some other self-help recommendations as well, but that's the key one, just 10 minutes a day.
So assuming that they don't buy this device, let's tell them how to do it with their hands. Show me specifically how to do that with your hands.
You can't do it with your hands. I mean, you could, but it takes a little training.
Right.
But if you want to be really bottom line and not spend $20 or $30 on a still point inducer, you get a couple of tennis balls, put them in an old sock, tie up the sock, and there's a couple of bumps, and you put those bumps of the sock right behind the back of your head, right behind above your ears, right behind the back of your head, and lie on it for 10 minutes a day. And if it's too hard for you, the tennis balls, get some of those blue racket balls from Walmart, the squishy ones, and lie on those. Those are a little softer.
Oh, so it's just gravity, the weight of your head that's pushing on them. You don't have to push hard or anything.
No, because what happens mechanically is that will induce a still point. What a still point is, it's like pushing the reset button on your computer, or like, you know, if your furnace is off, that red reset button, or rebooting. And basically, to make it simple, we're rebooting the central nervous system and increasing that flow of cerebral spinal fluid.
What sort of data is there that shows that this works?
Well, that was my next point, that what we did is did an original research study that was published in the American Journal of Gerontological Nursing in 2008. And we took people with mid to late stage dementia, and all we did was a still point, but we did it manually with therapists for 10 to 15 minutes a day over 6 weeks. And we found out we got statistical and clinical significance. Like, people started to regain their memories, start to recognize their caregivers. They started to speak in some cases in complete sentences, be able to feed themselves. So there's an improvement of cognition and also in mood. Because what we studied was aggression and basically agitation and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
People get calmer, as they will in cranial psychotherapy. The brain gets calmer. And then there's more cognition.
Well, I wanted to ask you to dig a little deeper on that, because a lot of the things that you're mentioning, you might have mentioned this already, but a lot of things you're mentioning seem kind of subjective or you know, anecdotal. So what sort of testing did you do before and then after the treatment? Did you do any sort of cognitive testing, or you were just doing testing on mood?
Well, what we're doing now, see, that was the research we did 10 years ago. Now this year, and today is, you know, Giving Tuesday, so we're talking about, you know, fundraising and doing all that, is that we're replicating our research. And we're replicating this in the field and working with senior centers across the United States, and also with the UpLedger Institute in Florida, doing intensive work where people can go for a 1 week intensive program. So to the point of being subjective versus objective, there's something called a Cohen-Mansfield agitation inventory. And I'm actually doing a post follow-up on one of our patients today that's in Iowa that went to our program down in Florida last August. There's something called the MoCA test, which is a standard kind of industry gold test, memory and cognition.
We did the same test actually with our memory test. I did a study on my memory program in McGill University. We did a similar MoCA.
Yeah, great. Great. So we have that test and a couple of other subjective measures of mood, depression, that kind of thing.
Fantastic.
So we're looking at memory, but we're also looking at the emotional component and depression, because depression, funnily enough, according to some researchers like Andrew Weil, creates inflammation as well, not just in the body, but in the brain. And the interesting thing you kind of touched on that I find it fascinating, you talked about the biome of the brain. This is a whole new area One of my associates in England that would be great for you to talk to has also developed a course on the brain and the gut. And what's interesting about the gut, it's a little bit, growing up in LA, like being at the LA Interchange. If you've ever been in the LA Interchange, it's crisscrossed with all sorts of freeways. That's the junction point for the immune system, the nervous system, the vascular system, the lymphatic system. All that is intertwined, and it's reflecting in the brain physiology as well. So gut and brain, that's why if we eat things that are inflammatory, it affects our cognition. It allows the brain to kind of melt down in certain cases. It's affected because of trauma. That can have a deleterious effect on memory and cognition as well. So all those things, as science is coming along, the new science of the lymphatic system is kind of like explaining why we're getting the results that we're getting.
You know, a skeptic would say that this sounds, you know, too good to be true. It sounds like unbelievable, but from my perspective, I know that things that are not necessarily patentable are very, very powerful. You know, I remember when people said that my memory techniques were snake oil back in the day, and I was talking about brain plasticity before it was, before it was considered a valid scientific theory. That was back when people were still pushing the hardwired brain theory. So, you know, I'm a big believer in just, you know, little things every day, but it's just, if this is true, this is mind-boggling. Like what you said, you know, three tennis balls in a sock is about as cheap as it gets for a treatment. And then, of course,
Even two. I'll save you a tennis ball as well.
There you go. And, but also, I would encourage that if people are serious, they should, you know, take the proper training and go through, you know, go through your clinic and everything. But, you know, that being said, that is amazing. But it actually makes a lot of sense because so much of modern disease is our response to inflammation. You know, I know this firsthand. You know, I suffer from a variety of inflammatory and autoimmune issues when I was younger. And I, you know, did things in my diet and lifestyle and everything that, you know, to get rid of it. But man, I went from like horrible chronic pain to feeling, you know, joyous and energetic. And I'm more energy in my 40s than I did in my 20s. And it's all from little exercises or little things. Little adjustments that are made to the body. So this could be fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, it is almost too much to think that something so simple could create this much an effect. But when you look at the basis of all the science, as you mentioned, if you look at body inflammation, which overflows to the brain, mm-hmm. You look at the effect of diet, you look at the effect of trauma, we work with concussions and even NFL football players with their memory and other issues, that when you look at the core level, I'm right now writing a paper called the Etiological Model for Alzheimer's. And etiology is really the science, if you will, of causes. So if you look at the basic core effect, all the pharmaceuticals that they're trying to work with Alzheimer's, they're trying to suppress the symptom, but they're not looking at the core cause of what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at how memory is affected, and underneath that, as I'm still just finding out even more recently, that's kind of a little bit influenced by the limbic system and our emotions, right? Mm-hmm. There's some aspect of that. So when you look at the three layers of the brain, the cerebral cortex, the limbic system, even the reticular activating system and fight or flight, all of that is intimately interrelated. So the cranial work's dealing with all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say also the best proof of that is there. You know, you have some pilot studies, and I wish you well on them, especially the fact that you're repeating some of your studies too, which is very, very good for scientific rigor. But I would say on top of that, there is a wealth of knowledge, very accepted, not controversial, on the benefits of exercise for treating everything from Alzheimer's, memory loss, and also, you know, things like depression and things like that. If not that, What does exercise do except, you know, increase your circulation, increase, you know, your motion, your movement, your lymphatic system, things like that? That's one of the biggest, you know, benefits. It just reminds me of when we made cholesterol the villain and said it was cholesterol's fault that people were having heart disease. It wasn't the inflammation that was triggering the production of cholesterol in the first place. You're right. They thought the Band-Aid solution. They fought the body's response to a stimuli. You didn't fight the original stimuli.
Well, and my mentor, Dr. Upledger, he was working with someone in the 60s that said just that. His mentor, Stacy Halley, said, cholesterol is not the bad guy. The cholesterol is trying to coat the arteries to keep them from being more damaged from the inflammation. But then kind of things, medical science went a different route. Oh, yeah. One other self-help thing that's important. You can do the cell point inducer. You can make even moderate changes in diet and decrease sugars. You don't have to give up all your donuts, but maybe just some of them every day. You can change your consumption of carbohydrates like bread. You can exercise. And also, then this has become a bigger and bigger thing, and I've done some webinars on this working with Arianna Huffington, sleep. Because that lymphatic system that we talked about, 60% of its work is done during sleep. That's when the system kind of shuts down and all of that drainage occurs. So getting a decent night's sleep can also help. Those are things you can do at home.
Would it be good to do this tennis ball thing just before you go to bed, maybe?
You could, or even any time of the day, doesn't matter when. But if you're really stressed out, that would be a great time to do it as well.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, man, I mean, I'm feeling the back of my head is feeling like achy, like it wants some tennis balls. It wants a massage. So you've really given me a lot to think about.
A little higher. When you put your hand on the back, come up a little higher.
A little bit higher?
Yeah, back there.
Like right around here.
Yeah, and the bumps right in the middle of the head. The bumps go on either side of the middle of the
head. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, hey, man, this is fantastic. I'm feeling like I'm going to give this a try. Thank you very much for being on the show. This has been fantastic.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.